Did you tell me? Okay. Welcome to the Ashland Park and Recreation Commission Ashland Senior Advisory Committee, ASAC, agenda for March 14th, 2022. It's 3:30. We're meeting via Zoom. And first on our agenda is approval of the minutes from our January meeting. So I'd ask for a motion to approve.
Mike, if we can just take a moment, I heard some feedback from a couple people who had some attendance barriers. Maybe I could do that under our opening, if that's okay. Mike, is that okay if I mention the couple people with attendance barriers today during our opening?
Sure.
So Deborah, thank you for being with us. Deborah let me know she'll need to leave the meeting early. That was 4:15, is that right, Deborah?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And Corey sends her regrets. She had hoped that she could be with us online. She's actually traveling now, but I think the time difference, she messaged me that the time difference was too much of a barrier. Oh, and Cynthia is our speaker, and she had thought she would be late, but she's already with us. So those were the three that I had, and I think things have been resolved, and we've got a couple guests on with us today. Thank you both for being here, but we don't usually introduce, so.
Natalie, go ahead.
Eileen, I just wanted to note that Ann Bellegia is also not here. I don't know if she'd given you any heads up.
I did not hear from her, so we'll assume something urgent came up.
I also want to, I think Jim Bachman finally got on. It looked like he had trouble connecting, so he may pop on later.
Okay, good.
Okay, anything else?
Not there, thank you.
Okay, then go ahead and ask for an approval of the minutes from January 10th meeting.
I move to approve. Second.
A second, okay. Mm-hmm. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, minutes are approved into the record. And then we can go to additions and deletions to today's agenda. And I'll recognize Eileen Glatt.
So I had sent this out via email, but we want to make sure we announce this item. Mike Gardner, as of our last meeting, was chair of the Parks and Rec Commission and our Parks and Rec liaison. And he, as you know, he has resigned as chair of Ashland Parks and Recreation, but he applied and was accepted as a community member on ASAC. So we are so fortunate that we get to continue having Mike Gardner as our chair, or so we need. Thank you so much, Mike. But we just wanted to make sure we got that in the record for the notes.
Okay. And unless you want to overthrow the chair position, I'll continue on at this time. So
I think I heard a unanimous support for you continuing to share.
Well, good. So that takes us to our public input section, where we usually spend about 10 minutes on public input if there is some. We have two speakers today. Is that correct, Natalie?
We have one speaker.
Eileen, you're just, it's the presentation that you're doing.
Yes, that's me.
Yeah.
And no one asked to give community input. Nobody asked for that in advance. See if anybody who's on with us wanted to say something. We do that sometimes.
So there's no public input. There's only comments when we go to the agenda item. Correct?
I think sometimes you've asked if there are anybody who's on the call wanted a chance to give public input at this part of the agenda, but I'm not, maybe we just ask for hands if we want it, if somebody wanted that. Not seeing any.
Okay, and we'll move on to number 5 on our agenda, which is the proposed mobile park zoning amendment, and I'll turn it over to Eileen if you want to introduce our guest, and we'll get started on that topic.
Well, I'm going to ask Cynthia to introduce herself. I was contacted by the proposed mobile home park, the Committee to Protect Ashland's Mobile Home Park. And Cynthia represents that group, and I'll let her introduce herself and their intentions. And you have a memo from them in your packet. Go ahead, Cynthia.
And I'll just mention real quick that if anyone of the other folks want to comment on this, we'll take comments on this topic after the presentation from Cynthia.
Okay, hi everybody. It's good to be here. So I'm not familiar with your group, but I'm sure you're doing good work. I know it. I am fairly new to Ashland. I live at Wingspread Mobile Home Park. Mm-hmm. Are any of you familiar with Wingspread Mobile Home Park? Okay. And Ashland also has two other mobile home parks. The other one's called Tolman Creek Mobile Home Park. It's just not too far from Albertsons in South Ashland. And then there's also a small RV park and mobile home park at the corner of Ashland and, Walker, that's a very old, more low-income little park that is, it's actually, the area is zoned commercial, but it's been there for decades. And it probably contains the most vulnerable members of our mobile home park communities here in Ashland. So I'll talk about that in a minute. So we've been talking here at Wingspread about the Oregon law, which allows an owner to close a park whenever they decide they want to close a park. They have to give a year's notice and written notice, but there's no remedy. There's no way of stopping it. And during that year, the owner has to give owners of a single wide mobile home $6,000 and an owner of a double wide mobile home $8,000. Otherwise, we're on our own. And nobody wants to buy a used mobile home. They're very, very expensive to move. So essentially, those of us who live in mobile home parks and own our homes would lose our entire investment. And most people who live in mobile home parks are lower income and many seniors. So I don't have the exact numbers, but I'm going to guess that 75% of the mobile home park residents in Ashland and probably throughout our area are senior citizens. That's definitely true here in Ashland. And because of the cost of housing in Ashland, this is probably some of the only affordable housing available in our area. So if Lark Park closed, we would have to leave, many of us would just have to leave Ashland, and I'm not sure where we would go. And there's people here who have lived here 10, 20, 30 years. Some people have raised their families here. Some people have raised grandchildren here. I know a couple of owners who visited their grandparents here when they were kids, and now they live in the parks. So they're real communities where people help each other and watch out for each other. There's senior citizens in my community here who've had recent surgery, and we help each other. So they're real lively little communities. So our group started talking about what could we do to protect and enhance our mobile home parks in Ashland. There are several mobile home parks around Ashland, but we're not really looking at those right now because they're not within the Ashland city limits. So, but we hope that maybe our efforts might spill out over time to help mobile home parks on the outskirts of Ashland and in the county and in the area. Pam Marsh told us that the area that she represents here in Southern Oregon has more mobile home parks than any other representative in the state of Oregon. And of course, there's mobile home parks scattered throughout Oregon. There's a national trend, which you may have read about or know about, that mobile home parks are closing for several reasons. One is that many of them were built in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Their infrastructure is failing, water systems, electrical systems, sewer systems. And although they're a real cash cow for owners, They can become more expensive over time. The park that I live in is probably, it's between 50 and 60 years old. And our water system is starting to fail and leak, for example. So mobile home parks have been closing all around the country. In some cases, they're closed because the owner wants to sell the land to developers. And the developers will then typically build higher end housing. And as you know, this area has a real critical lack of affordable housing. So mobile home parks represent affordable housing, and they represent elderly housing. So what we're doing in our little committee is we're looking at different ways that we could advocate for protection of these parks, not just to prevent future closures, but also to do anything else we can to make sure that they continue and that they're healthy and safe. One of the things that a park can do, but it's more difficult here in Ashland, is residents can buy the park and own it themselves as a cooperative. And that's been happening slowly around Oregon. There's a nonprofit called CASA of Oregon, and they've helped, I believe, 13 communities in Oregon buy their park, become the owners of their own park, and instead of paying rent, they pay money into paying off the mortgage, which CASA of Oregon helps to accomplish. So we may be in the future helping some of the parks become cooperatives. That way people can run their own community, make their own decisions, and nobody's making a profit. So all the money that goes into that project can be used to repair infrastructure and manage the place. So what we're doing is we're looking for support from people around the community and groups around the community who are concerned about housing and concerned about senior housing. And over the next year, the city of Ashland is going to be, there's a nonprofit called Eco Northwest is going to be doing research and publishing a report to help the city create what's called a housing strategy. And part of the question will be, how can Ashland protect affordable housing and grow more affordable housing? And we've been told that that would be an excellent opportunity for us to testify at public hearings about the need to protect the parks. And one specific proposal is to pass an ordinance very similar to what the city of Portland did. So in 2018, Portland saw more and more mobile home parks closing. And so they were able to pass an ordinance creating a new mobile home park zone, which is a new concept. Right? Basically, a land is zoned for a mobile home park, and the owner cannot close the park unless they go back to the city and convince the city that it would be best for the city's housing goals not to close that park. They can't just say, we're going to close it. So there's a little bit more oversight by the city on park closures. Portland passed this ordinance, and 56 mobile home parks are now protected in the city of Portland from just random closure. And the residents were very involved in helping that change to come about. So we're hoping that something similar could happen here in Ashland, and we hope that we might become a model for Medford or Talent or Phoenix or other areas, Grants Pass, to consider a similar type of zoning ordinance. So that's kind of a brief overview. What we'll be asking for in the future is possibly a letter of support from your group, if that's appropriate, or if you feel comfortable doing that. And we may ask for testimony at these public hearings. That's about as far as we've gotten so far. We're basically an informal community group at this point. But the Housing Commission is supporting our effort to bring this issue forward. And we're now participating in the Housing Commission's, it's called a work group. So it's a group of commissioners from the Housing Commission and several of us volunteers who are working together to come up with strategies to support the mobile home parks. So that's a very brief outline. I think I'll just open it up for questions now and see what kind of questions or concerns you might have. Do you want to just raise your hands or use the chat function or?
Yeah.
Let's see. Michael.
Hi. I'm familiar to a considerable extent with the mobile home parks, not only in Ashton, but around.
Great.
Because I've delivered Meals on Wheels to almost all of them, including yours. But the question that is at the back of my mind is, how can we legally prevent someone from going out of business? In other words, if I've got a store,
mm-hmm.
and I want to retire, and I own the land the store is on, I can sell it, or I can raise it to the ground and sell the bare piece of ground, because I own it. If I own a mobile park, I understand you got to give people a year, all that's fine, but why can't I just close it down, clear the land, and sell it for the best price I can get? I don't think that it's fair to an owner to prevent him from retiring from an investment.
Mm, uh-huh. So another way to look at that is to know that this particular type of business raises major public good questions, because housing is, after the fires especially, housing is such a critical problem here. And this owner has chosen a type of business that offers a critical public need, which is affordable housing, especially for senior citizens. And so it doesn't prevent the owner from closing the park. What it does is it asks the owner to look at what are the public goals involved in protecting affordable housing. And they're always free to sell the business. That's not the issue. They can sell the business to another mobile home park owner. We were told that our park is probably worth at this point about $11.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, or maybe it was, yeah, I think that's right. Or maybe it's $14 million. Anyway, it's a lot of money. And so an owner would be free to sell this, you know, retire, sell the park to another park operator. The limitation is to close it entirely so it's no longer a mobile home park, and thereby having Ashland lose. In this case, we have 206 households living in the mobile home park. So 206 affordable home housing units would disappear. And because of the public good that raises, what this zoning would do is make it, the city would have more oversight over whether it could be totally closed or not. So that, yes, you're right, it does impinge on property rights, but zoning in general impinges on property rights. So zoning does control what kind of businesses people can have. And so zoning is inherently an infringement on private property. But because of the public good involved in managing environmental concerns, managing housing concerns, that zoning has been found to be legal in the United States. And this particular type of zoning restriction actually has gone up all the way to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And they ruled that it was not an unconstitutional deprivation of property without due process. So it's sort of a gray area. I agree with you that it does go against the sort of all-American notion of private property. But when private property is being used and affecting the public good so greatly, I guess the courts have decided that there has to be a balancing. So we have another hand over here, Michael.
So I have two questions real
quick.
The first one would be, when you ask for this group's support, are you asking for us to support the future potential mobile park, home park zoning ordinance? Is that what you're asking for?
That is what we're asking for, and we might come back in the future and ask for something else, but right now that's the project that we're working on.
Okay.
Is to support the idea of a mobile home park zone. Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear on that.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I included a variety of issues besides that.
But then the other question I have, if there's not currently a mobile home park zone established, wouldn't we be worried that if it was coming, that the owners of the mobile home parks might try to liquidate their assets, as Mike Hurst said, you know, that they would want to, you know, be able to get out while they could? I mean, is that a concern?
Well, it is a risk, especially in a small town like this, where this kind of news would rapidly become available. And they're, of course, legally entitled to due process. So when there's a zoning change, they will be very well aware. A proposed zoning change, they will be aware. So yes, they certainly could do that. And that is a risk. But I guess it's a risk that we are willing to take, because the risk that we face now is that tomorrow any of the owners could decide, you know what, I'm tired of this business, or I'm getting old and I'm tired of dealing with all the headaches with this aging mobile home park. I'm going to sell it. I'm going to close it. We don't mind the risk of the park being sold, because we still get to stay here and get to live here, and just with a new owner. But the closure of the park is a different thing. So yeah, there is that risk. It's a strategic risk. In Portland, interestingly, the owners did not. There wasn't a lot of when the issue went to public hearings, there was not a lot of resistance from owners, because they still have a very high income producing business and property. And they know that they can always sell it to someone else. And there was no legal challenge after the ordinance was passed, which I thought was also very interesting. So I, you know, it's hard to say. One problem also here in Ashland is that the little mobile home park called the Pines Mobile Home Park, behind the coffee shop there at Walker and Ashland, that place is already zoned commercial. So that land is even more expensive. So I'm guessing that we're not likely to get a zoning change for that park, because the city needs commercial property. But the other two parks are zoned multifamily housing. So they could be closed right now, and they could build condos or apartments.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. You know, I haven't done this hand raising before, so I'm assuming you show up in the order that you raised your hand. Sandy.
My question, it kind of relates to what you were talking about before. And I'm just wondering, have you been in conversation with the owners of the parks in Ashland to know? I mean, you know, as you just said, in Portland, there really wasn't a lot of pushback. Do you think that would be the case here? Or, you know, do you have any idea, or is it too early? I guess one of the things I'm thinking is, if, you know, if this were a joint request, and the owners recognized the service aspect of what they're providing in these homes, it could be a win-win situation. But I'm just wondering if you've had any contact, or what you would think about that.
We have not had any contact with owners about this, and I think it's very unlikely that we would have a collaborative response. You know, they would be proposing to restrict their own use of their private property. And I just sincerely doubt that that would be helpful. So no, we haven't done that. Yeah.
Deborah.
So I don't know if in this new ordinance that you're trying to get, trying to maybe put through legislation in terms of not being able to, or actually my question is, when a mobile home park is sold, let's just say to another buyer, are there any stop gaps to prevent them raising the rent, and then those who can't afford the rent are going to get evicted? And I mean, because that happens a lot with people that come in and buy the mobile home park. So is there any safeguards with that that you would be included in this legislation, or?
Well, the good news is that Oregon law has a cap on rent increases for mobile home parks. Mm-hmm. Currently, the law states that the rents can be raised 7% plus the cost of percentage of the cost of living increase. So right now, I believe that a rent increase can be around 9%, but not beyond that. And owners know that. So fortunately, Oregon law does prevent dramatic rent increases. Mm-hmm. But it does, I mean, 9% is for somebody on a fixed income, on Social Security, a 9% rent increase is significant.
Mm-hmm. And is that annually they can do that?
Yeah, that's annual.
Yeah. Oh, boy. They can get you out.
That's a lot. I mean,
it is, yeah. But that was apparently, you know, a bit of a fight in the legislature. I think it was just not that many years ago that was passed. Before that, there was no cap on rent increases.
Hmm. Okay.
And Steph.
Yes, I was wondering when you're talking about an ordinance to make, is it zoned for a particular park or is it an area of the city or how does that work?
That's a good question. The way it worked in Portland and the way we would propose to have it here is that it would be just the existing mobile home parks. They would be designated themselves. The land that they're on would be designated as mobile home parks.
Are the mobile homes across from Romeo that are on, I think it's Idaho or Iowa, is that considered a mobile home park?
That's a really interesting question. I've raised that question with city staff, and we're all kind of scratching our heads. We don't know the status of that property. Some people have the impression that it's little cottages and RVs that are owned by people who, for whom they are second homes, and they come to Ashland to visit and they stay there. It's in very good condition. There's no office. We have not been able to ascertain the status of that property. Maybe you know more about it than we do.
Well, I do know that there are people that have been serviced by the senior center that live there.
Okay, and they live there year-round?
Uh-huh.
And recently, including...
I think it was initially a property of the Rainbow people years and years ago.
Uh-huh. I don't know. But that recently that people were being receiving services there?
That was probably a number of years ago.
Okay, yeah. I'm kind of puzzled. If anybody knows anything about that property, let us know. It doesn't look like a typical mobile home park. It's got these little cottages, like little tiny homes. It has a house and it has a bunch of large RVs. So I know there's some fire survivors that are living there now, but I just don't know. We have not been able to connect with any of the residents there.
We have about 5 more minutes on this and we have a couple more questions. So
okay. Ann.
Muted.
You're muted, Ann.
I know. I've got a baby in the background. so I know that owning your units are you know, part of the commitment to wanting it to remain a mobile home park. I mean, you know, it's not like you can move them someplace.
That's right.
But one thing I would anticipate is that with the push for affordable housing, the footprint of a single mobile home as opposed to several stories, more, you know, dense apartment type structures might compete with the idea of having this affordable housing for residents of Ashland. So if I don't know whether that would come up as an issue that that would cause people to say, well, hey, what if there was a better use for that land? So anyway.
That's a good point, and it is a question. The sense that I have from the city, especially since the fires, is that the city is very concerned about traumatizing and displacing people. The trauma and displacement of Mobile Home Park residents in Talent and Phoenix was very dramatic, and I think it really touched people. And a lot of those people are still homeless, basically. So there is the issue of just, you know, weighing against the trauma of displacing 206 mostly elderly, low-income people from their homes in Ashland and the long-term need to build affordable, larger, more dense, affordable housing units. That's a balancing act. The other thing is that new construction costs a lot. So preserving existing housing is a lot cheaper than finding a way to build new housing and go through that whole process, find builders that are wanting to do that building, getting it approved, all the permits, the costs of construction. I think that might be part of the equation as well. But you're right. It's this is sort of like, this is like single family home area, except that we're all on top of each other. So our little lots are not very big. But I can't remember how many acres Wingspread includes.
Let me bring up one more point, which is the one issue with mobile homes are that they're almost inherently difficult to make age friendly. And so I know many of the people in Rebuilding Together who are putting in or trying to adapt mobile home parks with ramps and they're dealing with very narrow areas and very steep steps up like that. So the idea, of course, serving elderly residents is something that's important for our constituents. But there is also the question of whether that is a safe environment for them if it can't be adapted to serve their
A lot of people have found ways to get the adaptations.
Okay.
And I think for the resident, balancing displacement and trauma and having to go somewhere else versus the hassles of figuring out how to make homes accessible, they're making homes accessible. I think that staying in one place is so important for elderly people. But you're right, that's an issue. Yeah. Yeah, and I think Mike.
Well, I'm just going to, since no one else had their hand up, did you mention earlier, do you have a percentage of how many homes in your park or in the parks you're representing are inhabited by people 65 and older?
I don't have a precise number. We don't have that data, and people are not always willing to share that information. But I would say anecdotally, I've visited all three parks, and of course I live here in Wingspread, which is it's 116 homes.
Yeah.
Just eyeballing it, I'm going to say 80% or more.
Okay. I was just trying to make it relevant to our group here.
Yeah. And it's probably, here in this park, it's probably 75% retired, older, single women.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay.
Well, we appreciate your presentation and thank you for the clarification on what your ask is for this group. I think it resonates with us on what you're looking to move forward. And at the time that you think you need to formally ask us for something, we'd expect to see you back and continue the discussion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm happy to. Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah. Very good. Then I appreciate
it. Okay. Thank you so much for your interest.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, very good. Next we'll move on to item number 6, which is proposed outdoor classroom space at the senior center. And I will turn it over to Superintendent Glatt.
Hi, everyone. I'm gonna explain the concept and then share my screen a little bit. I don't have a nice formal slide for you because this is still a project in development. But I think, I know you're all aware that we are a part of the AARP age-friendly, network of age-friendly communities, and we got that through a couple years ago. We're approved just before the pandemic started, and you know the Livable Ashland community works on many issues. Another component of AARP's age-friendly program and livability work that they do is that they have an AARP Community Challenge grant that they do each year. These are small grants designed to help communities like ours that are working on age-friendly and livability issues to get essentially quick wins. So it's a very fast grant cycle. If the grant is due in a couple weeks, the proposal, they notify you by May and you have to get your work done by November. And so it's really suitable for fairly small projects, and they seem to favor some capital improvement type projects, things that make a permanent difference, although they do fund programs a little bit. And so with the Livable Ashland group, we've been mentioning this every year as it's gone by, but you want to have the right project or you end up putting in more labor on the grant than it's really suitable. You want to make sure it fits your needs. And this spring, it really dawned on me that there is a specific opportunity for us because of COVID. So as we go back and forth and back and forth, I know we're all praying we won't be back in, you know, shutdown mode again anytime soon. But we, for instance, in January had programs that wanted to start indoors, but instructors and students then weren't comfortable coming indoors when Omicron was surging. And we scrambled around, and actually the line dance community tried out dancing at the pavilion in North Mountain Park. And that was a little aha moment for me. What our many classes need, so that's line dance, Tai Chi, yoga, they need a level surface that's suitable enough, at least, for the activity they're doing. And they need to not be baking in the sun or out of some light rain if they were going to continue to do it. You know, we need a little more coverage for weather. We can't handle all weather, but a little more coverage. And the pavilion is way too small, so those line dance classes filled to capacity immediately. I think we started with 12, and then we let it go up to 15 when they felt they could put in a little more. And that got me thinking about our lovely outdoor space outside our deck. And I think all of you have seen that, but that's probably a good time for me to share screen and show you. Good, she's enabled. Thank you, Natalie. Oh, Natalie, no, you have to enable me to share because Natalie came in with our account then.
Does that work?
Yep, that did it. Thank you. Okay, so let me bring this image up for you. Okay, so here is Hunter Park. You recognize the pool just to anchor you and our tennis courts. And this little roof here is the senior center. We're kind of small in the scope of things. And you can see in this very nice photo, thank you, Michael, for providing it. This is the senior center deck. And this slightly fuzzy part next to it is a big tree that provides some shade in this area. But this is a great winter photo because you can actually see our green area out here. And we have used this area. We used it for some outdoor yoga classes just on the grass during COVID, only during the summer and only early in the morning. And we have used this for an ice cream social back when we were able to have group events. We use it every now and then. And Ashland Parks and Rec Commission and Michael Black have always been very supportive of us considering this space available for the senior center rather than just anything else in the park. And this is a much bigger space than at the pavilion. And so I've been scrambling around and doing some research. And so what we're proposing is to put a better flooring surface here that is more stable. While the yoga students, at least a small number of them, kind of got by with the lumpy surface of grass and dealing with what day the gopher might make piles all over, it was not an adequate surface for doing something like Tai Chi or line dance. It would not be safe for our users. You know, we do see younger people sometimes doing Tai Chi on a grass surface in the park, but we're looking for very stable surfaces for our users. And so we're proposing putting a different flooring surface. We've also done some pricing on shade structures. I want to describe it a little bit more for you today, but what I'm looking for is just an endorsement of this plan and this grant proposal, because it will help me very much to say that we've gathered this level of community input, that our community is endorsing this grant proposal. I'm happy to say that the Livable Ashland Work Group also, their steering committee also has endorsed it. So it'll be nice to, if you approve, we'll be able to approve both of those. I'm just gonna see if I can enlarge this a little bit for you. Can you all still see that? It hasn't gotten too fuzzy. Looks okay? Okay. So we've looked at different materials. For these challenge grants, really about $10,000 is their typical grant size. These are not large grants. And so the best, least expensive floor surface is something called decomposed granite. And I actually think that's a very similar material you're seeing right over here in the baseball areas. It's this fine crushed granite, very fine. I always used to think it was sand, but instead of being soft like sand, it's a firm surface. And it would have a wood border, and it would just be firm and weather resistant, and also not extremely long-term permanent if something else needed to happen in this area when the pool finally gets developed. So it's a way of bridging this gap and being able to very flexibly move between programs that are in our activity room or at the Grove, to flip them over to here when needed. If COVID surges, flip them back. I think we'll also find that in the good weather seasons, we'll have some programs that say, we love being outside, we want to be outside. We priced a really lovely shade structure, but that unfortunately came in at $32,000, so I wouldn't be applying for that this round, but we might look for subsequent funding. The good news is that we have this shade tree shading west and the building shading from the west, the hotter side, and we have this big tree. They don't look as big in this photo because it's winter, but I can tell you they provide shade over most of the area in the when the leaves are on the trees, which is when you need the shade. So because we can't go for the big shade structure right now, I'm gonna include and ask for three or four benches along the back wall. And this would be a multi-use space. So we would still have the ability to bring out our folding chairs and set up the whole area actually on a more stable surface than the grass ever was, which would make us feel better about it. I always felt a little nervous with setting up tables and chairs out here. Would be more stable. So we can still do that when we have a concert here. We've used this for our ice cream social area. We've used this for the Brit Festival when they send out their intern program and their fellows to do a concert. So it would still work beautifully for concerts. It would still work well for doing a cookout or other outdoor table seating. And it could also at times be used by other activities in APRC. So I'm going to stop there and begin taking questions. Sandy.
Yeah, Eileen, is this seen as an extension of the deck, or is it, would it, I mean?
That's a good question. That would be beautiful, but extremely expensive to do a deck surface. It is going to be at grass level. It won't go all the way. This is actually a slope here and here. So it will just be this square area. I'm sorry, I'm not good enough at this to draw that for you on here, but it'll be a smaller area, but it would be 40 by 36, which is a good size, very good size room. I haven't measured at the Grove, but our classes in there love having that because it's very spacious. Any other questions, Sandy?
No, I just, it would be nice. It just would be nice, I think, if it were an extension, because then you don't have people having to walk down steps, and I'm sure you'll include safe ways to get up and down here, but it just would, you know, make it a larger, maybe more usable space. But I understand the limits of the grant and what you're trying to do, and I certainly support it.
And so I think in some ways this is a pilot experiment, a lower cost pilot, and if it turned out that there was a lot of utilization, we could certainly look at a more expensive material and a different kind of development in the future. I do want to share that this is a completely wheelchair accessible entrance from this side. And once they came down, they could, then it would be level here and they could probably roll straight across. And this is also a wheelchair accessible entrance that goes up to the deck level. And then there's three steps down to this lower walkway. And as part of this future hoped for pool development, there will be a walkway, a nice walkway installed all along here as well.
So, I think Anne has a question.
Yes, thank you.
Just a quick question. My thing about having conversation cluster benches, again, with any concerns about social distancing in the future, if you don't have benches where people are sitting side by side, but more, you know, more angly or whatever, so that, as long as you're going to get benches, keeping that in mind.
I appreciate that, and I'm viewing this as a very different purpose here, that the benches would be a place for people to observe what's going on here, to set their belongings on, to take a break. What I wouldn't want to encourage is conversation benches right up against a classroom space. I think that could cause user conflicts. We already have some issues with people hanging out on our deck and causing noise during our classes. But let's keep that idea. That would be another place for a challenge grant in the future. I just was particularly motivated to put the effort in this one because we have displaced classes. So I'm trying to just get us up to what we're already doing by having venues for our existing work. But it is absolutely something to consider going after in a future grant. Any other questions?
What's the timeline that you're working on here?
I need a motion of support today. I actually have to turn this in by March 22nd. So I'm at my writing stage now.
And is other APRC staff in favor of this?
Yes, that's a great question, Michael. We have the full support of Michael Black, and we've talked to our irrigation people and our parks people, and we've got quotes. Jason Minica did quotes for us on what it would take. A lot of this work can be done internally, so what we'd be asking for funding is all the material, and then our staff labor would be in kind, but they consider that it was a small enough project, they felt confident that they could get it done in the by November timetable that would be required. So I feel like we have a lot of support. We have a lot of support from our rec division. that they agree that having yet another an outdoor venue that, you know, I think senior programs would take first booking, but this could also be available on weekends when we don't do much at the senior center, at least right now. So it will just be useful, just like we use other rec facilities for senior programs. This becomes then another one of our resources within the system that can be booked for other classes and such here.
Looks like
a couple more questions.
Yeah.
Steph?
I was just wondering, in terms of the granite versus the type of hard rubber sort of material they use in playgrounds, is it one or the other safer in terms of falls?
Yes, I've tried to research some of those other materials. We have a huge issue with cost. I did talk to all of our instructors and talk to them about a variety of materials, and they all agreed that their first choice would be a tennis court material, which is an asphalt, so it's not so hard as cement, and it's coated with this wonderful kind of special paint, but super, super spendy. Just getting the asphalt in would be about $30,000. Mm-hmm. Like a deck, I think these other surfaces are something that could be considered in the future. We've heard about various kinds of mat material. It's probably, no matter what we get, it's better for some users and worse for others. And so not so good for dance when you have that kind of grippy surface. Whereas the yoga was probably the least drawn to this decomposed granite surface. So where we landed is, wow, it is just so much more affordable to do the decomposed granite, and it worked well enough for all of our users and probably for yoga, but that was the one we weren't sure about. So I think this is a great price point to just putting in the decomposed granite with the labor. It's somewhere south of $7,000 or so. That's a pretty nice pilot cost, you know, to really see if this is going to take with outdoor classes, or if there's just so many days the weather doesn't work that we don't get the enrollment.
Okay. Any other questions? Michael Hirsch.
Have you discussed this with all the instructors of the courses?
Yes, Mike, I spoke with all of the instructors and they gave me feedback about the surface materials and about they all agreed that they'd be interested in trying to do outdoor classes, especially if COVID was surging.
Steph, did you have another question or is your hand just still up?
No, that was it basically. Although I have to say for yoga, I've done yoga in the grass section and that works really well for yoga.
And that may be so, but that was the only class that was able to do it. I wondered, could we still make grass available here if they find that this surface doesn't work? We still have this grass area here that might be available.
Right. I think that it certainly has worked for the classes I've had anyway.
Great. I'm glad you'd like that. So I see we have a couple more questions and I'm aware of the time. So maybe we can just wrap up with one or two.
Yeah, go ahead, Sandy.
Well, I was just going to ask if you'd like a motion.
Sure. I might be interested in what Natalie wants to say.
Okay, I just wanted to answer what Steph was saying about grass areas. So we typically have held outdoor yoga in the space that Eileen was describing right off the deck, but there were times due to irrigation or something where we did have to hold our yoga class elsewhere in Hunter Park. So I think yoga has that flexibility to move elsewhere in the park if they prefer to do so.
Okay, great. Sandy, I would accept a motion if you wanted to make one.
Yeah, I would like to move that we support this grant request with enthusiasm.
Okay, for the proposed outdoor classroom space at the Senior Center.
Yeah, thank you.
And do we have a second? Okay, we have a second. Is there any further comments on the motion? If not, I can't remember. Natalie, have we asked you before to ask for to take a vote?
Yes, you have. And okay. I could, Eileen, if you could stop sharing the screen, that way you can see everyone. And I would prefer to take a vote by having raised hands. That is much easier for me to see.
Okay. So all in favor of the proposal, raise your hand. It looks unanimous. Well,
Well, Mike Hirsch did not raise his hand.
He just did.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So all in favor. Very good. Okay. Thank you. Now we'll move on to item number 7 on our agenda, which is standing reports. And we have no APRC liaison yet. And I think we'll just skip to Steph and see if there's any updates from City Council. You're muted.
One of the things that we're doing currently is we're going to be doing a survey that should be, it's being developed now and should be out hopefully in May, to try to get a sense of what is most important in the community to the community members. With the budget as it is, it may be that we need to look at some programs that might, we may not be able to fund. Unless we would raise revenue. So it's important for us now to really get a sense of what people feel in our city is the most important services they want to see continue. So that's been a subcommittee working on that in the council, and I'm also on that subcommittee. There also have been kind of the regular business that we have. A lot of it is a lot of the issues are issues that relate to budget right now, I would say. Yeah.
Go ahead, Kathy, do you have a question?
So that was brought up in the last meeting, and there was a question about how these surveys were going to be distributed into the community, and there really wasn't a clear answer about that. Have you determined how that's going to go, who these surveys are going to go out to?
They're going to go out to everybody that's living here by mail, and also there'll be some places available for people that might be, for example, Aura population or some other populations that are not permanent living. But mainly it's a survey for citizens because they're the ones that are paying the taxes.
Can you tell us where you are in the survey process right now, Steph?
Where we are is that we're trying to look at what it would be like to reduce $1 million in budget, and we're putting together bundles of different types to get a sense of what kind of services would be most wanted by the citizens in terms of fire, police, parks, public works. This is a general fund item, not a special fund item. So that's what we're looking at. Really just wanting to try to find a way that we can hear the voices of people that we don't always hear. Because it's easy to generalize from comments and emails that everyone feels a particular way. And when we went, I don't know if you remember when we went door to door, that was a couple years ago. It was very interesting what people said when you were actually knocking on their door and they were giving you what they thought was most important. So trying to get that kind of a sense from people.
Real quick, when do you think the survey will be out?
In May, hopefully.
Okay. I think Anne has a question for you.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if one of the questions is along the lines of, would you be willing to pay more?
There is a question like that.
Yeah.
Increasing because, $11 was also an option.
So what?
Well, it's an option would be some way of increasing revenue as well as cutting services.
Okay. And the $1 million shortfall that you're trying to prioritize away, does that include some of the errors that were made in the budget process with regard to funding for parks?
Mm-hmm. So $600,000 you're talking about?
Yeah. So
yeah, I think that, you know, there's certainly people that would like the issue of whether there should be any kind of bonding or any kind of special district for parks. That's something that certainly some people are interested in. Some of the counselors appear to be interested in having parks be a department. So there are a lot of different opinions on that right now. And
well, I'm just wondering if the survey is designed to get at that structural.
Yes. The survey, well, one of the things we really do want to know is if there is a desire to keep service levels as they are, or whether or not we would want to, for example, do more regional things, have a regional fire department or a regional police, or outsource some of our public works.
Is there a feeling that the voters or the respondents actually understand these options? I mean, it's easy to say I want this or I want that, but I don't know that they appreciate the repercussions of those decisions. Is there going to be good education?
The questions are going to be framed so that if you have this, this is what will happen. If you reduce funding, for example, if you reduce the ambulance service, make it outsourced, there will be less money to for some of the funding for fire departments comes from ambulance. So trying to connect in some ways what an outcome might be in terms of money, how much of a raise would that be? Looking at different packages and trying to see how you could do some of both. There's been a lot of energy put into trying to be sure that the questions are not asked. There's also actually a lot of connected sites and information to people while they're looking at this. We want to keep it pretty short. This is not going to be very long because we find that people can't answer very long surveys. So we're trying to get at the meat of what we think people are wanting in our community.
Is there going to be a question about specifically the senior program?
I haven't seen yet what the bundles look like. I have asked for that.
So I had Eileen had a hand up, and then I can go to Mike Hirsch.
I want to be a little mindful of the time. I know we spent a lot of time on this last month, and I
I think it's been helpful to have an update, but I think some of those same questions remain, and we really ascertain there's a limit to our control. We're lucky that Steph is representing and asking for that with seniors in the subcommittee. So I just want to see if people feel okay about it, whether we could wrap this up and make sure we have time to finish some of our other items.
I think we have time. Michael, go ahead, Mike.
I just wanted to say that, having had experience with this, after your questionnaire is completed, before you send it out, please be sure to select a few focus areas and have face-to-face with a group of citizens, seeing how they react to the questions, because you may learn an awful lot about a question which some people consider leading, you know, leading you to trying to get you to say something they really don't want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's a good point.
Yeah, good. Agree.
So we'll turn it over to Natalie for an educational report.
Thank you, Mike. I just wanted to let you know about our upcoming events for March and April, because we try to do one educational event a month. And so later on this month, on March 23rd, Anne Bellegia has graciously volunteered her time and expertise again, and will be giving a presentation on the sense of touch, which is stimulating quite a bit of interest, Anne, even though it's still on Zoom. So that's a hard sell these days. But I'm excited as well. And then in April, we have the Southern Oregon chapter of the Alzheimer's Association doing one of their prepared presentations on understanding the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Natalie. And I'll turn it over to Eileen for the superintendent report.
Great. As always, you have my written report. I will highlight or go a little deeper in some things. But the newest thing is that, of course, our mask mandate has changed. And you might be curious how we're implementing that. As of this morning, we have different signage up that says mask recommended. So it looks similar. It's still pretty strong. It has mask recommended, and it, in the finer print, it talks about all of the guidance from the Oregon Health Authority. The Oregon Health Authority is still strongly recommended that people in risk groups continue to wear their mask. And those risk groups are the ones you know about, but they also included everybody over 65 still. So those risk groups, pretty much everybody who walks through our doors is in one or more of those categories. And I would love it if most of our folks continue to wear masks. I don't think that's what we'll experience here in the building, especially with the food program where people, of course, have their masks down and it sort of sets a tone. Our staff are choosing, we are no longer required to wear masks per Oregon law or HR rules, but we are choosing to continue to wear masks when we're interacting with consumers. We felt also that signage was important. Our biggest goal now, I think, is helping those who want to wear masks feel safe and welcome to wear those masks. And staff are wearing our own masks in interactions, not when we're just alone at our desk, but we're wearing those masks partly to role model and send that signal that masks are more than welcome in our facility. And I know that in some of our classes, I understand in Tai Chi this morning that all of the students kept their masks on. So we're going to see a lot of variations depending on the groups and sort of the subcultures of those groups. Certain activities attract different political streams, I think. So the happy news is that every one of our instructors was ready to make that change. I had some anxiety that we'd have some instructors who weren't ready to teach an indoor class with masks off, but everybody felt that the timing was appropriate, and all of our other precautions, like having classes in our big gym and not being so crowded, were still helping. Something else I've been meaning to bring up with all of ASAC, Natalie and I would be very interested if some of you at times would like to volunteer for an event and or if any of you, like Anne, have some sort of presentation topic that you would enjoy presenting. It's really a lot of fun for us, and frankly, a little easier when we have one of our own do presentations. We tend to get it worked out much faster with them. So maybe I could just see by hands, and we can make note, is there anybody who would like to volunteer at an event? And let's keep in mind that we're still living in COVID. So, you know, we will take precautions, but both Anne and Sandy are willing to volunteer at an event. Okay, great. Thank you. And as far, oh, and Steph says she would too. Okay, great.
If people want to hear just comments from a counselor kind of thing, I'd be willing to do that too.
Oh, that's a really interesting topic. Ollie gets a fair amount of traction on topics like that, don't you, at Ollie? So I think that's a great suggestion, Steph, in terms of a presentation. Cool. And Sandy, you're muted.
Sorry. The four women counselors did a wonderful program for AAUW a month ago that Steph was a part of, and it was really quite well received, I thought, didn't you, Steph?
Yeah, I think it was very well done.
Yeah, it was very well done. There were, you know, they had prearranged questions, and it was quite substantive, and maybe that's something you could think about.
Cool, great. And you may certainly at any time send Natalie, Natalie's our lead on this, but it's fine to send it to both of us if you want, any ideas you have for presentations. It doesn't have to be you. Also, sometimes it might be that you connect us with somebody in the community that you think would do a good job with that. As long as you connect us with someone who's going to return our calls and not make it really hard for us. And since I have the floor, and since Noriko, since you've graced us with your face on screen, I'm just going to use this moment to introduce, I'm going to say your name the best I can, but then Noriko, you can unmute and say, what did you say it for everybody? Pronounce your name properly.
Noriko,
Noriko
Toyogawa, Noriko.
Noriko Teoga.
Yeah.
So Noriko has replaced Mary Miller. She is teaching the psychology of aging class at SOU, and she's been meeting with some of us offline, some of the ASEC members, and definitely Natalie and I, and we're really excited about that collaboration with SOU. We'll probably get Noriko to teach a class at some point too. So good. Thank you for that moment. It's been on my mind for months, and I keep missing to ask you for that. And the very last thing I want to let you know is we are again going to have OHSU nursing students starting this spring, and hopefully we'll carry the same two in the fall. I've already heard they've got two, and they don't even know what our topic is, so that's exciting. But Natalie and I would like to have the nurses continue to work on this digital literacy and digital access project that we've been working on in a variety of ways with a variety of partners. And that we realize there's a perfect intersection with nursing, which is doing some education around telemedicine. How does that work? How can you be prepared for your telemedicine visit? How do you get on helping in the classroom with devices and helping people navigate some of that? And then the flip side of that that has become very useful for many of us these days is the My Chart system that is used by both Providence and Asante. And so we'll be asking the nurses to form those contacts with Asante and Providence and get the right speakers in and organize some great education. And then they'll probably be the helpers in the audience helping people with their devices. So that's our plan. I hope we're able to pull it off. We're just meeting with them this week to begin to share our ideas, and we'll might morph a little bit. That's it for me if there's no more questions.
Great. Okay, we're right on schedule. We're going to make it to Livable Ashland this week.
Yay.
So I'll turn the floor over to Anne and Sandy, and you can give us any update that you want. Thank you.
Well, I'll start and then Anne can continue. we continue, we're meeting every other month. So we met last month, we met in February, we will meet again in April. And we continue to have a good representation of groups in the city, and we're kind of thinking of calling ourselves an alliance, because it without going into a lot of repetition for you all, I mean, we see ourselves as kind of a clearinghouse, kind of providing synergy. Actually, this digital project that Eileen was talking about did have some of that in our last meeting, because we have the library, which has digital capability and digital education capability, in the hospital, because Stephen Hirsch, who's the administrator there, is interested actually in helping people learn to use MyChart. So it was a good example of how just having people together and talking about these things really is helping to make the city more livable. And so people know what others are doing and are able to pitch in and help where that's appropriate. So we will continue in that format. We will probably at some point need to get our act together and do a more formal needs assessment write-up and some proposals, but we're taking it slowly, and so far nobody's been on our back about moving things any quicker. So I don't know, Anne, you want to add something?
Well, I would say that the idea of the Livable Ashland Alliance is not problematic for AARP. A number of the groups who are part of the age-friendly communities or states are separate from their cities. Some of them are nonprofits, and some of them are other formats. But since we don't have a budget, we don't have authority, it's appropriate for us to consider ourselves sort of a standalone entity fostering collaborations, and I think that fits well with the climate in the city at the official level, and so that's, I think, a good strategy for us, and I think it's also very hopeful to be able to at some point, very soon hopefully, publicize the efforts that we're doing, because I think that there will be livability suggestions that bubble up from the community and stakeholders beyond the groups that we've interfaced with so far, when they know that we exist and there is a format for these ideas coming forward. So
any questions? Oh, Eileen has her hand up.
I just wanted to comment, when we think about Livable Ashland Alliance as a standalone entity, I think the relationship with ASAC would be that liaison role, that Anne and Sandy, as the chairs, would be the liaison back, and Steph and I both sit on that committee as well. So there'd be a good communication channel.
And Deborah.
That's right, and Deborah, thank you. We're well represented, but we aren't controlling the Livable Ashland. It's not our formal subcommittee.
Steph, you had your hand up.
Steph?
Stephanie?
Yeah. What I was going to say is that I think that we've already made some differences, and I think it's important that we recognize that. Some of the housing that has been built now in the cottages have a universal design. And I think that really happened because we talked to developers and talked about how important that was. We've also looked at when we do apartments, or when we're building a more affordable housing, looking at the first level for universal housing and looking at ways to also provide transportation options for seniors, advocating for the bus program, the small transit program, for example, that went to houses that are real important to people. So we're doing a good job. I want you to think that, know that.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. Well, thank you for that update. And I'll ask if there's any other items from ASAC members. I have two hands up. I have three hands up. I'll go to Steph first. Go ahead, Steph.
I just wanted to mention that as the senior center is becoming being used more, I'm still on the board of the emergency food bank, and we still have the ability to help out with food. So if they're especially with the way the prices are these days. So if there's a need there, remember that we're here, and we also do deliveries. So there you go.
Okay.
I want you to know that I volunteer a lot at the food bank, and I bring food here on a regular basis whenever it's asked for. And also that we are doing a direct delivery service out of the food bank to any senior who calls up and says, I want food, we deliver to them. So we are doing that. We are delivering food to seniors in the area who request it. And if the senior center would like to have a store of staples, if they've got a place to keep it, like beef chili or canned vegetables or canned soup or whatever, I'll bring it. That's what I do.
Okay. There you go. Okay, thanks for that, Mike. Eileen, you had your hand up?
Yes, I think I should first respond to what Mike is saying, and then I'll bring up my other point. I think Mike has been wonderful throughout the pandemic, and Steph, thank you for continuing to remind us about that resource. For the last many months, Mike's been working directly with Sarah because most of the food was then going directly out with the meals. But I think this is an excellent reminder that it's probably time for us to do more of a free table option like we used to, and maybe we can even restart some of the bread out on a given day of the week. So, you know, there's other people now. They're actually beginning to have 8 to 12 people coming for lunch on the Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. And of course, we're having more and more people in the building with activities. So that'll be great. We can expand that. Mike, what you said in terms of storage, and it's almost like having a little mini food bank, which is a really interesting idea. Storage is absolutely a challenge for us, but with your permission, I will incubate that one a little bit and see if I can come up with, is there a place we can have a dedicated shelf and let people help themselves rather than just the small amounts we keep out on the food table? As Mike knows, we make him only give us a little bit at a time because we get overwhelmed with our storage. But I'll think on it a little more and see if there's something more we can do with shelf stable things.
But please get the word out to all of our members that if they call the food bank and say, I would like a monthly delivery of food, we will provide it. We will deliver it to them. Many of us who volunteer at the food bank, the food bank closes, drive to some one or two or three people's homes and give them a box of food. And the box they ask for. You know, somebody wants only organic or somebody that wants gluten-free or whatever it is, we comply.
Absolutely, Mike. We my staff, we are constantly referring to that resource whenever we're talking to people about either food security or just their budget challenges. We talk about, well, these are some ways you can offset your budget a little bit and have a little more left at the end of the month for the other things that we don't have a resource. And we do, if you read our newsletter, we are rotating community resources through every single issue. And I know, I believe it was just 2 or 3 months ago that we had that, and we will rotate it in again. We're always prioritizing what's most current, but we push it. We absolutely push it, Mike. You probably have no idea how many of your clients there come from our referrals. So that's great. Mike, my last item was, if you feel like you have a couple minutes and you want to take it as a discussion about moving to in-person or Zoom, and maybe just a little conversation about the pros and cons of that to consider for next time.
I was thinking more about a show of hands to people that were either for or against it as a starting point.
Could I mention some of the pros and cons before people do the show of hands for their voting?
Be my guest.
Okay. I think it's obvious that it's a wonderful social thing and informal networking happens when we meet in person. But I just want to point out that we have had quite a lot of our members being able to join our meetings remotely and integrate that with their travel schedules. And that is the other side of it. It's certainly also been true that community participation we've seen that across the board with APRC. So yet we are at a point where we could schedule an in-person meeting for May, you know, unless there's a surge, we go back to Zoom. But we would be more than happy to host you here all at the Senior Center if that is your choice. I just wanted you to be aware that the very members who have taken advantage of joining us remotely, not all of them are here to speak for themselves. So with that, Mike, I'm happy to let you call for hands.
I might as well just open it up for discussion. Any other comments? Anybody interested in meeting in person? Okay. So, you know, my take would be is that we should strive to meet in person in May, and obviously we can call it at the last minute if for some reason the pandemic resurges or there's some other reason to not meet. I think, you know, on average, we would have about 12, maybe 13 individuals in the room. I'm sure we could socially distance. Obviously, anyone can wear a mask that wants to wear a mask, similar to the classes that are starting up. And my personal opinion is that most the city and even the APRC commission is probably going to start meeting in person, you know, by May. So I don't think we'd be going against the grain by meeting in person. So I would say, just from the show of hands, and I didn't mean to upstage you or anything, I just think that people, we want, you know, it's like we'd like to default to meeting in person. And if for some reason we can't, it's obvious that we could set up Zoom in a short period of time and carry on as we have. I think we should shoot for that in 2 months for the May meeting. And I don't really see anyone saying negatory on that. So looks like Anne, you want to make a comment on that?
Oh, I just would suggest that that we try to get a head count before a meeting, just to make sure that we have a quorum in case, you know, it turns out people are traveling and they could come if it were on Zoom. So, you know, if that puts some sort of an extra step in the planning process, but I think that would be useful.
Yeah, to me, we've done it you know, for decades prior to Zoom and the pandemic. I think, and I would just say this to the participants that are here, everyone's been pretty good about sending a message to Eileen generally, or to Natalie, one or the other, about not being able to attend the meeting. And I would hope that, you know, we would do that in the future, the group that's here. The other thing I might suggest is to, when we send out the packet for the upcoming meeting, is just request that if someone's not going to be able to attend, to let Eileen know, so that we can, ensure that we have a quorum for the meeting, which, you know, once we have a liaison from the parks, you know, we need somewhere in the neighborhood, I think, of 5 or 6 people to have a quorum. And I think we can generally, you know, get that. And I don't think it negates people from showing up if we say we'd like to meet in person. That's my feeling anyway.
Well, we will still welcome guests, absolutely. I think by the time the packet goes out is not the ideal time for us to change from an in-person to a Zoom meeting.
Because no, that's not what already I said.
Public. Okay, but that will be a second point that people can let, a last minute chance, right, to let us know for quorum.
So that we can have a absolutely to know if we're going to have a problem or not, or if we
right
need to start calling people up to make sure that they're going to attend.
I think the city is also trying to see if there's a way to have somebody be able to be on Zoom while there is a regular meeting, if there's any technology for that. So that's another.
That is true. We really beg that we don't try to go in that direction. That is very different at the city council chambers, Steph, where all of the technology is wired. We're a little more humble here, and it's quite a bit of competition to get the city council chamber. So don't make us do it, please. I beg of you. Thank you.
Okay. Well, that completes our agenda for today. We're almost on time, and thank everyone for their participation, and we will see you all in May.
Great. Thank you.
See you in May. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care.